Gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant, or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Guys, what's up? I want to take a quick second to let you guys know that our podcast is supported by Anchor. That's right. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. I'm doing this ad from my phone as we speak. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. Evidently, I can't talk. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Now back to the show. Wash up, walk-ons fans. We have a treat for episode 96 today. Over an hour of Sean Welsh Hawkeye content. The good old boy from Dayton, Ohio. A guy we spent 5 years with in the program, made a ton of memories with, knows everything that we went through. And he's got some good stuff to talk about. Let's have it. Let's go. Welcome back, Wash Up Walk-Ons fans, to another episode of the podcast. This is number 96, and we're joined today again by another one of our teammates, former teammates, a guy that we all have enough respect for that we call him father. I don't really know how else to describe this guy. He just kind of feels like the father of our whole recruiting class. He was just kind of like, I don't know, one of the staple figures in the family, and it's going to be a pleasure to have a conversation with him. Sean, welcome on, man.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's a big honor. You know, as we were talking a little bit earlier about, you know, podcasts, I listen to you guys pretty much weekly, religiously, during the week, during the season, so that's, you know, whenever I miss a game, it's how I stay, you know, up to date.
That's a good way to stay up to date.
Yeah, man.
Daddy Welsh. That's what I
Sean Daddy, that's what I call him, man.
I don't know why it is the way it is, and I'm glad you brought that up, Drake. For some reason, I mean, in the locker room, there's a way you greeted every guy. Every guy had a way to greet another guy. And for most people, if definitely for me, Sean walks through the door and it was Daddy Welsh, what's up? And I don't know why. Where did it start, Sean?
It had to be Ike, right?
Yeah. So Ike, you know, one thing I noticed with Ike is he's really creative with his, like, his vocabulary. Like, he comes up with stuff, nicknames or words.
And it sticks.
Yeah. And it sticks. Well, the interesting thing is, so my dad, he played rugby in college. That was his thing. And his nickname, I think I remember my mom telling me, was Grandpa. Wow. So it might be something I get for him. I'm one, step down on.
You just literally looking at you right here on the camera, the polo shirt, the nice blonde hair. You just look like the great American father. And that's just kind of your daddy, your Sean daddy. I don't know.
I try to run a, clean show here, just.
We don't.
High and tight. Yeah.
So. Man, you're right about that. Something about Ike Butker, just the way he's just
he's funny, man, and
just a polarized, like he the way he says things, it just sticks. When he started saying elite, everyone started saying elite. Stallion, everyone was now a stallion. Like whatever he said, I just went with. He was just one of those guys.
He's a great guy, and yeah, he's a trend center with the 5 years that we were there, there'd be one word that would be going around the locker room. Like somebody would be saying, it's just a new word for something it always seemed like he was kind of the trendsetter there.
Talk about you guys coming in together and your relationship with him being able to go through 5 years, half a decade with the same guy and in the same position group, the same meeting room. And what Ike kind of helped you out with and in the relationship you guys had, what was that like?
Yeah. I mean, the thing another thing about Ike is I think it's one thing I noticed when I first came to Iowa was how just over the top kind and nice folks are, but Ike really kind of embodied that. He's a really kind guy. He's always, bringing other folks along, no matter what the situation is. So 5 years together, and you share, you share a lot. You share successes, you share, hardships, those game simulators when you're a big fella.
Ooh.
How about the stations in 60s when you're a big fella?
No, they're not ideal. But you know what? Once you get a little, later, you find out with those 60s, you just gotta, there's a technique.
There's a system.
There's a huge technique to it.
There's a system.
It's little things like that you share together, which they're great. And I'm so happy to see him and Katie. They're great. They're growing up and making me feel like, I got to get things moving.
I mean, my guy Ike is within minutes. Of dropping out a kid, man. It's wow. He has this, a little stallion absolutely
cooking in the
oven. The oven is got steam coming out of it.
I mean, at this point, the oven's basically turned off and they're just waiting to pull it out. Like it's Christmas dinner and not quite, the whole family hasn't arrived yet. And then when they do, dinner's served.
I think if anybody,
except we don't condone eating babies.
Yeah, don't eat kids though.
Yeah, I think if anybody's qualified to be a dad, it's him. I mean,
imagine having Ike as your father.
I can't, because having Ike as my friend is awesome, but having him as my dad, I'd be that'd be insane.
Ike is the kind of dad who, when his kid, because he's having a boy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, when his kid grows up and fucks up, his kid is going to feel so bad for letting Ike down.
True.
That's the way it is.
He's going to be the cool dad, for sure.
For sure. 100%. Katie's going to have to be the mean one of the two. And
you have to, because if somebody doesn't keep him straight, and Ike is, I don't know, he's so lovable, man.
No, yeah, he's the best.
But 5 years with Ike, it's so fun to get somebody in on the podcast. We've had a lot of guests recently, some around our age, some were older, younger. You were in our class, and to have someone who ran the gamut with us front to back and know the exact everything that happened during our years is fun. Take us back to 2011, 2012 high school, Sean Welsh, in Ohio. where was your mind at as a high school football player, and what was the goals? What was kind of going on with Sean back then, and how did the Hawkeyes come onto your radar?
Yeah, so I'll take it back a little bit. I grew up in southwestern Ohio, just south of Dayton, kind of near Dayton, Cincinnati there. And Ohio is football is just, it's a huge thing there. It's part of, especially high school football. The Buckeyes are huge. But high school football is just really a big thing in Ohio. And it has been for a really long time. And for me, I grew up a huge Ohio State fan. I remember, I think my first game was 2002 there. They beat Michigan to go to the Fiesta Bowl. And I remember they're like, it was one of the last years where they were letting people like tear down the goalposts.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Jealous. But I would have loved to have been a part of tearing down a goalpost.
Oh my gosh. It looked like, and what they would do. Yeah. They would take it, they would carry it down. And then they're in the Capitol. I think they'd walk it down High Street and then they'd throw it on the front lawn of the Capitol building.
That's insane. Like,
it used to be a tradition there, but
can you imagine if they allowed us to take the goalposts out of Kinnick, how rowdy some of those wins would have gotten?
Boy. They were rowdy enough as is.
I know they were.
We'll get into that.
We'd have been throwing midgets through the goalpost at Summit.
Yeah, it's those wins, and when they would rush the field, man, it was like claustrophobic, man. I mean,
yeah.
I wouldn't be able to talk for days, but grew up a huge Buckeye fan. Really only knew of the Hawkeyes when they would play Ohio State. I get into high school and things start kind of progressing for me. I started going to camps at a lot of MAC schools. So like a Bowling Green or Ohio State would have big camp and all the MAC schools would run it. So you would have the coaches there, and the MAC, it's Division I, but it's where a lot of guys, if they want it, at least in Ohio, at the time when I was there, they want to kind of get things rolling to get up to the next level. You start with a MAC offer, you get that first MAC offer, and things kind of get rolling for you. And I got my first offer from Bowling Green. And that was a real, huge relief for me, I'd put in a lot of work. Getting ready for those camps and a lot of traveling. I'd go up to Michigan State and all over the place, all over the Midwest. But got that first offer and things started rolling. A couple other MAC offers rolled in. And I don't even remember what my ranking was. Do they still do stars I was either like a 2 or a 3 star. I mean, nothing spectacular. A little stumpy guy from Southern Ohio.
Stumpy.
That's a great. Yes. Heart don't have stars, first of all, Sean. And we're making a t-shirt. And now that you say that, we got to get you a Heart Don't Have Stars.
We'll get you one.
They're on the way. But what was I about to say? Brian Ferentz used to always talk about, he would point you out in meetings. You see this guy? He's like, this is probably the best offensive lineman in the Big Ten. He's like, he'll never win any fucking – or he'll never win any awards because he's a fucking midget. But this guy, you're glad to have this guy pulling in front of you on power. So count your blessings. He had a spiel about how you were a fucking midget, but you were a good midget.
You know what? I tried to do my best. And, whatever a little guy can do and bring to the table, he does his best. But I was really fortunate to have a lot of opportunities thrown my way. And I think I remember at the time I had a couple bigger offers, but they were kind of far away. So I remember like Miami, Florida. I remember who else? I think like Air Force came in.
Isn't it funny how now you think back and it doesn't even matter who offered you?
And it's such a big deal at the time.
It was your whole life. It was everything.
It was everything. I mean, I remember the first. I remember. My high school coach, the head coach at Springboro, he would get the mail for the players that were getting recruited. they would come to his mailbox. And remember my first letter came in, it was from Oregon. It was, and it was just kind of like a print off thing that they sent probably every, you know, a guy that they, that was even remotely in the, you know, on the recruiting circuit or whatever. But, you know, I remember taking my buddy Andrew, he flipped out, he flipped the shit. He's like, oh my God, it's Oregon. He's like, yeah, no, it, looking back, it's not a huge deal, but at the time.
But it feels like it, man. It feels like the earth is splitting in front of you.
Yeah.
Shit is powerful.
You get that first letter, you're like, well, fuck it. I'm going to Oregon, baby.
Yeah.
I'm a duck.
Yeah. You seriously do, man. The you're naive to like the whole process and everything.
Yeah. It, yeah. I mean, you know, it's that whole, you know, that saying, you know, hindsight being 2020, it's like, you know now what you didn't know then.
Yep.
And, you know, I remember, you know, I, at the time, I think it was my junior year, when Coach Ferentz came, Brian came to we had a workout. It was, I think it was the spring of my junior year, and might have been my sophomore. I can't remember, but he stopped by kind of last second. So we had kind of had like a skills and drills thing we were doing, and he wanted to see me kind of hit a hand shield and, you know, my and all that. And, you know, he was very, how Brian is, he's really good, great poker face. You're not able to tell one way or another what he's thinking sometimes. And you don't know if he did well, you don't know if he didn't. And I was like, oh, you know, did my best, you know, we'll see, you know, what we hear. And I'm not exactly sure when the offer came in, but, you know, it was getting to a point where I was really trying to decide if I wanted to hold out and wait for, you know, Ohio State. Cause they had, at the time, I think it was Luke Fickell and his staff there, which was kind of a lot of, oh, Kevin,
what's going on, War Daddy?
How'd you hit him today?
First two holes are pretty rough, but after that, not bad, dude.
So I was out today too. I played like dog shit. I was terrible.
Oh man. Yeah, but I shot a 46, but I was plus six through the first two holes. Mm. So, you know, plus four.
That's not good, Kev.
Rough start.
It's a rough start, but, you know, after the next seven holes, I was plus four. So,
yeah, that's not bad.
There you go.
Yeah.
Killing it, man.
Anyway, we're in the middle of, first of all, thank you for bringing in Sean as War Daddy, because we already went through how everyone calls him some form of dad. And then, he's dad. And then we're now right as he got offered by the Hawks in his story.
Exciting start.
Yeah. No, it was so I remember taking a visit out. I came out with Brant, Brant Gressel.
Oh, yeah.
We've told the legendary story, dude. We've gone through that one.
Oh, which one?
The exit.
The
legendary.
The mic drop.
Yeah, that was a, we all have our moments, I guess. but, no, I came out with him. We actually watched the game. I think it was Penn State. It was, 2012 or 2013. I think it was 2012.
Would have been 2012, and it was a bad game.
Yeah. So, Sheriff and Anau both went down for serious injuries. I mean, they were not doing it was like back-to-back plays too. I remember
me and Sheriff were broken leg buddies. We had very similar injuries.
Yeah, no, it was a rough night for the Hawks, and it was an awesome thing. I mean, they had the full, you know, fireworks. I think it was the last night game they had for a while. Mm-hmm. But I really fell in love with the place. I mean, the day before we, you know, kind of walked around Iowa City, checked out the campus. And we kind of, you know how those things are with recruits. You spend a little time with the coaching staff sometimes, or you just get to meet a lot of people. And I got to meet a lot of people around the complex at Iowa. I think the one reason why I chose Iowa over anywhere else was the people, not just, you know, the people that were part of the organization, but also just the people in general, I was talking about it earlier, but some of the friendliest people I've ever met. And it's not to say folks in Ohio aren't friendly, but it's like you can tell a difference when you're in Iowa City, just the way that people are. And I really fell in love with the program. I thought it was they really focus on doing things right, and it's not just all about football. It's about like teaching guys how to become a, you know, really not just a functioning member of society, but someone that who can really succeed and do well if they follow, you know, a code of ethics and principles, and they stick to it. So, I went with them and never regretted the decision.
So then you committed pretty soon after you got that offer, or?
So yeah, I can't remember the exact timeline. I want to say I got the offer maybe the latter part of my sophomore year. I know I committed before my senior season.
Okay.
And it was either, the spring of my junior season. I can't remember how many months or what the exact timeline was.
Being honest, how bad did you want to go to Ohio State though?
Oh, dude, I was killing for it. And the thing is, I can't tell you how glad I am that I didn't, and I didn't get that opportunity.
Yep.
Because like you were kind of talking about it earlier, like, you know, I was very fortunate to have some of the success I did. But that only would have happened at Iowa. Like any other program, if I would have gone to a program like Ohio State, I don't want to sell myself short, but odds are with the talent and the size that a program like that brings in, I probably wouldn't have been top of the depth chart there.
Right.
And yeah, there were bigger guys and more talented guys than me at Iowa, but just from the sheer fact that Iowa is a developmental program and they put time into guys, really kind of developing them over that 4 or 5 years, that helped.
Yeah. That's why I went to Iowa instead of Ohio State too.
Same. Yeah. You know, Sean, you mentioned the developmental side of Iowa, and obviously, I mean, we're known for it. Everybody knows that, and it is crazy because by the time we were seniors, you know, like Brian said, in Drake's little story there, you know, you were one of the best linemen in the Big Ten. It's just crazy how you take one path or another, and maybe you don't even get an opportunity at a school like Ohio State, and that whole thing never kind of fosters into reality. That being said, you're still pretty talented. I would say probably one of our higher talented guys coming in, more college ready than
definitely most. One of the most college ready.
And so now we get into, and you can talk a little bit about the time leading up to this, but we had 1 year to kind of redshirt, but even in that redshirt season, there was a few guys that got to travel on the roster. And I
remember our first experience.
I was going to say, I don't remember if it stuck in your memory.
Was it traumatizing, Sean?
I want to hear your side of the story.
So for you, it was Kreider. For me, it was Van Sloten.
Were
the guys that kind of, you know, they were in charge of kind of helping the young guys, you know, figure it out. And I remember Brett telling me, just make sure you're early. Just make sure you're early to the meetings, the dinners. Make sure, you don't show up right on time, because, you know, by that time we've already started.
This was our first travel to Iowa State in 2013.
That's right. And, you know, I can't remember specifically if he told me 15 minutes. He probably did, and I just didn't listen. I said, we'll be fine. I mean, we're early anyway.
Yep.
But we take the bus out to Ames, and Kluve and I are rooming together for our first game traveling.
Which, by the way, who fucking set that one up? All right. Who put the two true freshmen together who have never traveled before? Who?
Yeah.
I mean, someone fucked up, but anyway.
They had, you know, that is a screw up. You're supposed
to be fair. To be fair, no starter wants to deal with, you know, having to make sure the freshman doesn't, you know, like shit his pants his first time. You got other stuff you want to worry about.
Yeah. Yes. No, I totally understand that. I would have liked to have had an older guy who kind of knew the ropes, and not to say that you were bad.
Roommate. No, I'm right there with you.
Yeah, no, we weren't exactly sure. Like, we didn't understand the gravity of, you know, and the importance of being
promptness
at the very least, like, you know, 15 minutes early.
And you sit there and twiddle your thumbs for no reason, but you have to do it. You have to be in that room in the silence with your thumb up your ass super early.
Well, and you're just like, you're sitting there and you're hoping that somebody isn't going to show up late. Because you know, if the game doesn't go well, it's going to be brought up. And it's going to be, it's funny. But so, yeah, Kluver and I, we go downstairs and, who, Kluver, who was the guy? I don't know if it was, Sheriff, it was somebody who traveled with the team.
It was the old cop that used to be with, is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah, and he's sitting in the hallway, and we're walking like, you know, don't have a care in the world, and we're walking to where they're, you know, serving dinner, and, you know, he's like, you guys better hurry, and...
Well, first of all, it was like...
That's not a good feeling right there.
First of all, it was like, there's not a lot of guys... Or any guys walking with us right now.
There was nobody out. There's
also not a good feeling.
Didn't see anybody in the hallway. Didn't see anybody in the elevator. Didn't see anybody in the lobby. And yeah, this guy's telling us, hey, you guys better get moving. And we get up to the, were the doors closed, Kluver?
They were like being closed.
Yeah. Yeah. So they bow their, so they're getting ready to pray. And, I have the just like the fleeting hope that all right
they're gonna bow their head
right now, nobody can see
us. Maybe if we just go
our way over here that no they won't know the difference, we're here. And of course, you know, we got the scarlet letter of being last, Fed picked us last to go up to get food.
Oh.
And just sat there feeling absolutely miserable. And I don't know, Sloat didn't chew me out or anything. I remember you saying something that like Kreider got after you.
Casey got after it.
No, Sloat was just like, yeah, I told you, man, you gotta be early. And
I wish I would have got that.
You know what? At the end of the day, I thought it was a great lesson. It really reinforced not like it, I'm glad it happened because it I don't think for the rest of my entire career their playing career that I ever was late for anything.
Yeah, it was so that happened, and like you said, you know, the table dies with the individual that fucked up. So
the ship, yeah, the ship,
the specialist table and one of the O-line tables were the last two to go eat. So everyone's pissed, not only because you fucked up, but because you're the last one through the food line. And you just have to sit there like this.
Oops.
And it's just like, oh God. Yeah, so we got done with dinner, and that was the night. The next morning for when really was like the next time that we had to be there on time for something was like the meeting, the offensive defensive meetings mm-hmm. before you go into the, you know, you meet and we all come together for the video. Casey had me there 30 minutes early.
No, I was right down there. Yeah. Super early. And I think, you know, I remember just being super, like being one of the first, it's like, touching the stove when you're a kid. It's like,
yep.
Yeah. You learn that lesson and it's ingrained into you.
It was a great, you're right. You said it perfectly. I'm glad it happened because it was a perfect situation and kind of scenario where you and I didn't have a lot to worry about that game. So it was just kind of this example and lesson learned of, hey, when we travel, this is how fucking serious things are.
Yeah. Like, it's funny that Sloat was Sean's mentor, because Sloat was the original dad, and it just like passed right along through.
Yeah. Anybody's a
100%. Dude, like I remember Sloat would like be in the complex on Sunday mornings, like before we watch film. He's like reading the newspaper.
Yeah, I've never seen a more grown college player ever.
I've also never seen someone get so pissed about random just little pieces of trash in the complex.
Yeah, the amount of frickin' and yeah,
didn't cuss.
Frick. Yeah. No, Sloat was one of my favorites. The guy's a character, super hard work. He's another one of those guys where he certainly had the size, but he had the opportunity to come to Iowa, and they were able to, he was able to be a starter.
I've never seen someone sweat so much through a rollout.
Oh God,
dude, he was a sweater. We'd come in on Sunday rollout. We're just little glute. Little hammy, flip it over, little psoas. And by the time we got to psoas, this dude was a puddle. I mean,
I remember one time we had a walkthrough on a Sunday, and I was one of the defensive dummies when they were kind of going over misplays or whatever, MAs. And I accidentally stepped on his foot. I was wearing my cleats. And freaking idiot just punched me in the chest, nearly stopped my heart. It's another lesson well learned. Don't step on Sloat's feet.
So we'll speed it along here, because we got caught up on funny stories of the first year. That first year, great learning lesson. A bunch of other scenarios, I'm sure, where you kind of got shown the ropes. As far as our class goes, kind of along the same storyline of you getting to travel early, there's a few people that year that got to kind of travel and got to see how it worked. Desmond got put in right away. Mm-hmm. Meerkat, you, me, and LaShawn. It was like those five guys who got to travel. We actually went What?
Reggie.
Oh, yeah. Oh. And Reggie. We actually got to go to the Horseshoe that year.
Yeah.
How was that for you?
So, a bit of a bummer. So we were talking about all that Ohio State stuff. I remember it was Reggie. So we had a bye week, I think, the week beforehand, and it was the very last practice, the very last play of the very last practice of that bye week, leading up to Ohio State week, I think.
Oh, you got tweaked up, huh?
Yeah. So Reggie hit me. It was an outside, toss play, and he hit me in a certain way. My leg was like in the ground, but I tore my meniscus, and it wasn't, you know what, looking back, I didn't know that was something that you could like just keep going. If I could have gone back, I would have just like waited till the end of the year and had it cleaned up,
right?
But I heard, you know, I was told like, yeah, it's torn, it'll need to be cleaned up. So I just got it taken care of, and I was back by bowl prep, I think, I remember, but it was right before Ohio State. That was a bummer, but yeah, it was, from what I remember, it was a close game, right? I mean,
yeah, we were actually up at halftime, and then, Carlos Hyde and,
Braxton
Miller just kind of took over. They were unreal. We go through that year, and again, same storyline. As far as people who got to play early in our class, you were one of those guys. That next year, I think, right? Our redshirt freshman year, you were already getting time. You kind of got plopped into the lineup at some point. Maybe
Left guard. So I was right next to Sheriff.
Yeah. How was that? And your little, was that earlier than you expected? What were your thoughts? Kind of take us through that.
So, I mean, you know, the great thing about like, you know, I guess playing at that level, so you got spring ball, you got all the time in between like the last season and the next. So, you know, you get an idea of what that lineup's going to look like. At least from what I remember, at least in spring ball and in camp. And, you know, I started playing with the ones, I think my sophomore year. So 2014 spring ball, and, was still with them in the lineup in camp. And playing next to him, it's like, you know, when there were times where you didn't even like need to do anything. You just post the guy up and Brandon, you know, sends him halfway to the other sideline.
The move.
having him as a mentor, and there were a lot of guys, but him just being right next to me and all, not just with the X's and O's and the technical stuff and the fundamentals, but also the culture stuff, the stuff, little things you need to do. I mean, he was a huge mentor with Ike too, with just like, I remember like gaining weight and putting weight on. And
the stories of Sheriff and Ike and gaining weight are mythical.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a great guy. He still is, but just being able to kind of pass that down to the younger guys. And, I believe I was next to Blythe as well. I think it was Sheriff, me, Blythe, Walsh, and Denial.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
And it was a bit of a rough season from what I can remember.
Just a bit.
There were just a couple of missed opportunities, and then that whole game at the end was not fun. That was the Hawks Slayer, right?
Yep.
Yep.
That's the Hawks Slayer.
Oh man, that was not fun.
That was bad.
After the Hawk Slayer of a fucking bull prep too.
We were all slayed. We were pre-slayed before we went into that one.
Yeah.
You, from an offensive lineman perspective, what is it like to go into the off season? You're a big guy. I mean, you didn't have to put on weight like Ike did, but I wonder what at this point, especially after the Tennessee year or that bowl game, knowing that next season, that off season was going to be probably a little bit more grindy than maybe some other ones, or at least the coaches were going to be maybe more touchy. As a big guy, what was it like going into some of those conditioning sessions? Like I was 215, but I was 5'10", so I felt like a lineman half the time.
Dude, yeah, you know, I mean.
Hey, guys. Yep, it's me again. Got to interrupt the episode real quick to talk to you guys about Spotify, one of the sponsors of this podcast. On Spotify, you can listen to all your favorite artists and podcasts in one place for free. You don't even need a premium account. Spotify has a huge catalog of podcasts on every topic, including the one you're listening to right now. Yeah, we're on Spotify. I don't know how we did that, but pretty cool. Other things you can do on Spotify is follow your favorite podcast so you never miss an episode. Premium users can download episodes to listen to offline wherever you are, and you can easily share what you're listening to with your friends on Instagram. If you haven't done so already, be sure to download the Spotify app. Search for Washed Up Walk-Ons on Spotify or browse podcasts in the Your Library tab. Also, make sure to follow us so that you never miss an episode of the Washed Up Walk-Ons.
It's different for everyone, of course. And for me, it was not one of my favorite parts of the game.
Did conditioning ever make you want to quit?
No. Of course, in the moment, you're like, yeah, what am I doing?
Just look down.
What the fuck are we doing here?
Can you imagine if in the middle we would have looked, we just would have looked up down the line like, hey guys, what the fuck are we doing? All right.
Yeah. But like, I think it comes with kind of age. It's like you understand the importance of it. Like as you get past like your first season, you start to understand and like you're actually playing like, oh yeah, I've got to be like, you know, like yoked for this shit. Like I gotta be good to go. I gotta be able, you have those 13 play drives where you're in the 3-yard line and it's like your fifth time running it in a row. You're praying beforehand that it's like a play action or some shit if you're a lineman. But you got to be able to, like, you understand as you get older, like, you need that shit. But no, yeah, it's not fun. I mean, the GPP, that always kicked everybody's ass. For me,
did you ever get sick from prowlers?
So it's interesting. I tell people about this. The interesting thing with prowlers I found was with other forms of conditioning and, like, just when we would go after it, when people would get sick, it would be it would be immediate. It'd be right there. You know, say it's a game simulator. Mm-hmm. Guy needs to throw up. He just, you know, does it and it keeps going. With prowlers, it was like sometimes it would be in the middle of it. Sometimes it would be right after. Sometimes there'd be like a time delay on it.
There's definitely a time delay, dude. Once your heart rate settles.
Sometimes it almost happened before. We're just the anxiety of thinking about it.
There was one time where it was in the old complex. So it would have been either 2014 or 2013. I think it was 2014 that we did prowlers. And it was our first time, I think, doing like the full weight, not the freshman weight. Mm-hmm. And I did the prowlers. Like we got done, and there's that feeling after you get done with prowlers that your legs are like, you're wobbling.
They're and not like, your legs anymore.
Yeah, everything's kind of getting dark around the eyes. You're standing there.
That's so about, right on.
Yeah, and you're just like, all right, they're calling it up. Like, all right, can we just, like, you know, move things? Like, I need to, like, just, like, sit down and water. But anyway, like, we, you know, they call it up, we, you know, we head back in, get, you know, I get, you know, take a shower, get all ready, get ready for class. And it was about, like, you know, I'd say half an hour, 45 minutes after we had finished the prowlers. And I feel completely fine. Like, that's the funny thing is, like, I felt completely fine coming back, you know, not nauseous at all, fine taking the shower, fine getting dressed. But as soon as, like, I go to, like, head out of the locker room, just projectile, like, into the trash can on my way out. Just, like, out of nowhere, just like that.
Like, your body was like, hey, by the way, we forgot to do this, but you need to throw up everything you have.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, probably I made a solemn vow once, like, I was done. I'm never touching a prowler again. I don't want my progeny, my children, their children to ever touch a prowler.
We took different routes because I literally pushed one on Friday. So I was thinking in the moment, I was thinking the same shit though. For me, it was different because y'all had to actually be conditioned for what you did. The conditioning for the specialist was just, you're part of this, so you have to be a part of this too. Mm-hmm. And so I learned real.
I mean,
what's up, Kev?
Clue. We already hated you enough for doing nothing during practice and not having to go to meetings.
Wasn't much.
Did y'all really just want to skimp on conditioning too?
Well, okay, but here's what I'm saying is, like Sean was talking about, you realize I need this shit. Like, as a linebacker or a lineman, like, I need this shit. When I'm in a 13-play drive, I'm going to need this conditioning. What this is doing for me, I'm going to need it. So that's a motivation while you're doing it. For a specialist, it's tough because in the middle of the fucking ninth rep of cut 85s, I'm like, in a set of 12, I'm sitting there like, I don't get 9 plays in a game. Why the fuck have I run 700 yards right now? Like, this is doing nothing for me. So the motivation isn't there. So it very quickly becomes this is just for mental toughness and, like, a discipline hardening exercise more than it is I actually need what it's benefiting me physically.
Look at it.
Yeah, but, like, you know, I think, like, I don't know. I respected – so, like, everybody knows that, like, you know, specialists sometimes get, like, just a rap for not, like, you know, having to go through, like, the shit, like, the contact and all that.
Yeah, all the time.
You let them know.
Yeah, no, and it, like, you guys watch, like, fucking Shark Week while we're getting our asses chewed out, you know.
It's always in camp.
And, but, like, there's...
When you're lucky, the Olympics is on during camp.
Yeah, yeah, but like, you guys, I mean, the fact that you go through those game simulators and you did all that stuff, it's like, all right, you know, they're not, you know...
Right.
They're still part of the tribe.
That's where they're still a part of it. That's
I
where
I gave it to them. They definitely worked pretty hard. Like yeah. Marshall dominated workout.
Oh my gosh,
dominated him. He was a monster.
So yeah. Fast.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm yeah. I mean, I have the change of direction record.
Yeah.
Okay. So we move on, Sean, and you're into. You started your sophomore year, your second year, third year. You've already got a ton of
a Big Ten championship and a Rose Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, go through 2015, and you can talk about your favorite parts of that season as well. But kind of go through the rest of your time as a starter at Iowa, and in general,
So. Yeah, 2015 was a really kind of funny year. I mean, it was really a year of like highs and lows. 2015 was the spring that I took off.
Yep.
I wrote that article about my struggles with mental health, and I remember listening to that that episode. You guys kind of talked about mental health a little bit. It's something that it's not easy for a lot of guys to talk about. I really want to just commend you guys for using the platform you guys have. I work like Kevin, I kind of work in healthcare a little bit. I mean, I by no means, an expert or professional, but it's really interesting. I think of all the problems that could be solved if our society, our government, our culture just made it more of a priority and maybe kind of, put more time and resources into understanding the effects of mental health, negative or positive. Now you see it on the news a lot, the effects of it for better or for worse. It guides our actions every day. But it's something that I'm passionate about. It's something that I know a lot of people struggle with, and even if it's something like you guys brought up after playing, there's certain moments in life that it smacks you in the face, and you're not really sure. No amount of training or what you might have done in the past, you're not really sure how to combat it. The important thing is to find what works for you. For me, it's different. But for me at the time, I wasn't really sure how to really kind of talk about it or go through it. Up to that point, I never thought I had heard of depression. I had heard of anxiety. And you talk about, that I remember starting my sophomore year, quite a few games, and I had a lot going for me. It's on top of the world. For every logical reason that, I could think of, I had no reason to be depressed. I never saw myself as a person that would be that person. But then, over time and a lot of education and a lot of talking about it, start to understand it doesn't really discriminate. It can affect a lot of people. It can be biological. It could be situational. It could be trauma that causes it for a lot of people. For some people, it could be transition. So it could be, being, done with, football. It's like, nobody hands you a guide for that. I don't know.
Would have been nice though, wouldn't it?
Yeah. No.
Fucking nice.
Yeah. It's.
We dealt with our problems by creating a podcast,
along with a multitude of other
and
bad ways.
Yeah.
You know what?
So, Sean, I like how you brought up, how it seems like. On the outside, you got everything going for you. Cause I think that's something maybe people on the outside don't fully understand.
Not
is that,
all.
They view us, big time, Big Ten college football players, larger in life, everything going for them, what could possibly be wrong in their lives. And, I think we mentioned it too, back when I was going through my battle with depression, It's like, I have like everything going for me in my life. What do I have to be depressed about? And that almost like, you know, made it even harder to deal with.
Makes, yeah,
I
don't makes know it if worse because you feel so, guilty. You're like,
you feel guilty for feeling bad about yourself. You really do.
Yeah, no, the amount of times I brought that up when I talk about it to somebody, it's like, it makes you feel not ungrateful. Maybe ungrateful is not the right word, but it's like, at the time, I know so many other guys that what they would give mm-hmm. to be in my spot. And yeah. here I am, just not feeling great. Not, you know, and I have so much to be grateful for. How could I not feel right or feel good about it? So I totally empathize with that. I mean, it's a, you know, I think it's not easy, you know, and it's not easy for folks to talk about.
I want to go back real quick, Sean. Don't mean to interrupt you, but you mentioned that that spring is when you took a break, and none of us knew, and didn't need to know.
Yeah, no one on the team like really got a full explanation. You know, KF mentioned something to the team, but yeah, no one.
And I don't like, we don't have to get too far into it, but from at least looking back now, it seemed like the coaches handled it fairly well. And I think our team handled it fairly well. Like, we just kind of knew, like, something was wrong, and then you were going to deal with it. And when you came back, we were ready to accept you with open arms. And, like, talk about that. And if I'm not mistaken, you took another two-week break at some point as well?
Yeah. So, you know, it kind of goes back to the reason why I went to Iowa, why I chose Iowa, was the people. Brian Ferentz, Coach Kirk Ferentz, Coach Doyle, between the three of them, they really kind of helped me navigate that time. They were really flexible in letting me kind of take that time to, you know, figure out what I need to figure out. And they helped integrate me back in. I can't remember how long it was, but I'd come in and lift when, you know, you guys would be practicing. And, you know, that time, you know, it was great too. But it also, you know, offered its own kind of, I guess, challenges as well. I mean, I lived with a few teammates and, you know, they would be at spring ball and they'd be working their asses off. And here I'd be at home, still on scholarship, still, you know, getting a stipend every month, getting my college paid for, and these guys are out there busting their ass, and here I am. So that was a thought that kind of ran through my mind a lot. Mm-hmm. But I'm grateful that I was given the opportunity to sort it out. I came back towards the beginning of summer. I think I started right back up the summer.
Yeah.
And at the time, I think it was June or July, I can't remember exactly, but I met my girlfriend, Carissa, then, and she's been a major positive force in my life. And then we hit that season, and you talk about, like, you know, how crazy the difference, you know, the beginning of the year was versus the end. It's just like, I remember standing, you know, the week leading up to the Rose Bowl, and you know, right before the Rose Bowl, just like, holy hell, like, what a year it's been. And then, like, you're standing in the tunnel of the Rose Bowl about to run out. It's like, your grandparents are there, your parents are there. It's like, wow, you know, so glad I stuck with it.
When we got off the bus, at the Rose Bowl, I had the biggest holy shit moment of all time.
Yeah.
Like, the Rose Bowl. I still say that all the time. Like, I cannot believe that we actually played in the Rose Bowl.
Dude, it's you know, that's a tradition that goes back, I mean, to, you know, our grandparents, you know, when they were watching, or they were, you know, maybe even listening to Big Ten football.
My dad talked about the granddaddy of them all so many times, like insane.
Yeah, no, it was that was a great year. And we had a lot of great guys, great senior leadership. It was about 20 or so guys in that senior class that I think made that happen. I think it was the 14 season that really put a rocket up their ass to get things moving and get the culture right. And, you know, we had a lot of other guys that just wasn't the seniors, but we had a lot of guys involved in getting that moving. Extremely fortunate to be a part of that.
I mean, that year was just... It's hard to describe unless you were part of it. And I think
it's really fun to go back and reminisce on though. Yeah. I love talking about it.
Yeah. So then, you know, and then we have 2 years left after that and we end up, so a couple maybe highlights or, you know, important kind of cliff notes through that may relate to you, Sean, is we end up actually finishing one of our final games, not our final game, but one of our final games with the game versus Ohio State. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that one. And
yeah, I've been wanting to ask him about it the whole time. I just want him to be like,
I want to back up real quick. Right before senior year, you did come out.
That's the other part I was going to
made your speech for the reporters. Talk about why that was like important to you. I know you kind of touched on it.
And earlier, how fucking hard that is to do.
You know what? It was really scary. And for me, like, you know, I had talked about how it's something that runs in one side of my family. So I felt really nervous about outing people or, you know, I felt like, you know, what's this going to do for me down the road in terms of credibility and, you know, professionally. And, you know, for me, it was just kind of a moment where I just wanted to say, you know what, I think the net positive of this is going to be better than any kind of, you know, harm or bad that can come from it. And I actually, you know, I'd written a big kind of, you know, the original op-ed I wrote was way longer and edited, it just kind of had to shrink it down. And yeah, for me, you know, it was a really like scary time for me. I was really kind of scared and nervous how it was going to play and how it was going to go. And I didn't want to be known as the depression guy. You know, that would be my kind of calling card. And the thing when they think of Sean Walsh, when he played at Iowa, he was the depression guy. But, you know, just kind of said, screw it. And, you know, we got it out. And for me, I've really never really regretted the decision. You know, I still get notes from, you know, guys that are playing right now, guys that have played in the past, guys that are in high school, parents that have kids that are playing. And, you know, I always preface it with, like, I'm by no means an expert. Tell them what works for me. I tell them a little bit about my story. Tell them about that 2015 season, how, you know, I was really on the verge of whether I wanted to play or not. You know, really, you know, ended up playing and sticking with it. That's that 2015 year. And it's just been a great thing, a really positive thing. But yeah, I did it, and I hope it's helped some folks out, and just want to, you know, again, commend you guys for talking about it as well.
You used an even better platform than we did. You got the national media, and all we only have, you know, the little bit of Hawkeye fans. So you did a better job than us, man. You're the trailblazer.
You know what? It's the more that we can talk, you know, folks about it, and it's nothing to be ashamed about. You know, the better. It can only help folks.
This brings this brings up one thing quick before we get to the good stuff on the Ohio State game our senior year. Carmen, did you use Carmen at all? We've talked about Carmen like six episodes in a row now. Yeah. And I had to imagine that you and Carmen spent some time together.
We spent a lot of time together. I think I was seeing her maybe every other week or maybe every week.
First of all, University of Iowa, can we pay that woman some more money? Whoever's listening. God damn.
Walk on. I'm on that train.
She got my vote. You know what? She, even beyond like the conditions, like, you know, whether it's depression or anxiety or whatever it might be, someone might be struggling with, she helps the program and she helps guys that, you know, maybe they don't have someone to bring something like that's on their mind. They can go to her and kind of vent and talk about it. And she's just such a valuable person and just important. So much. She's so important to a lot of those guys, and she helps them out a lot.
Huge. Absolutely.
Huge. All right. Now we go into our senior season, and you can talk about just your senior season in general, kind of how it comes full circle. I got to imagine at this point, you know, you've thought about, damn, like a similar feeling to that Rose Bowl of, wow, look at where I'm at. Same thing as that senior season, like, look where I've made it to. And then talk about beating the Buckeyes in Kinnick Stadium.
No, I was, again, really fortunate to, you know, the cool thing, the interesting thing you see if you're there for 4 years or 5 years, four or five. But over the years, the classes kind of, there's attrition there, and they kind of turn down, and you get down to a really, a great core group of guys. You know, I thought we had a really great class, great group of guys.
That's why we can get on a podcast and talk shit about it years later, absolutely. Because we were all so tight.
Yeah, no, yeah, you got it. I mean, like, you know, you share so much in the way of, like, you know, really great, awesome moments, and then just really shitty, sucky moments.
It's a couple that, of those.
You know, yeah, that bond, you know, it's hard to break. But, you know, that senior season, it was a lot of fun. It was, you know, it's hard sometimes because you catch yourself thinking about, I don't know. It's tricky because it's important to plan and think about the future and what you need to do.
I did a terrible job planning for the future. Let me tell you what.
You know what? But it's so hard though, because everything that the way that, like, you think when you're playing and when you're a part of the program is, it's a week by week and it's a day by day. And you keep the picture small and you try not to get too global with your thoughts, with, you know, what you're thinking about. So it's totally understandable why, you know, anybody would struggle to think or, you know, get just like plan and think about the future. But sometimes you catch yourself, you know, thinking, and then you catch yourself reminiscing too, thinking about all the fun times you had. And, you know, it's not over yet, but, like, you know, you can tell it's coming to an end.
That's right.
And we had a lot of fun. That Ohio State game, I mean, that was, for me, it was kind of poetic justice. For me, just privately, I mean, it was a, I remember my senior year or my junior year in high school, that was when the coaching staff was kind of getting turned over at Ohio State. And it was Coach Meyer that brought in all the new staff, and they started bringing in guys from all over the country. I remember Coach Trussell, I think he was kind of similar to Coach Ferentz, where he kind of tries to keep a lot of guys from Ohio, tries to bring a lot of guys in from Ohio, and just like Coach Ferentz, big Iowa guy. You know, Coach Meyer, he's big. He was really big on bringing a lot of, you know, the best talents in. And, you know, it was right around the time where I was being recruited, and I kind of had a chip on my shoulder about that. It kind of, you know, it helped me kind of, I felt kind of like maybe like I wasn't good enough to play there, or it just kind of, it pissed me off a lot. I remember thinking about it sometimes at Iowa.
Playing with that walk-on mentality.
Dude. I mean, I was a program of, you know, walk-ons and the leftovers of the blue chipper.
That's a really good way to put it, my man.
You know, guys that, you know, they're, you know, scrappy motherfuckers. You know, and
you don't want to fight us.
No.
You don't want to fight the Hawks.
No,
you don't want to fight Sean Welsh either, because he's got the fucking strongest hands you'll ever.
Yeah, he's got the claws of death,
dude.
No, but yeah, you know what? For me, that was such a great day. My parents is actually, you know, they came out for nearly every game. My dad did, but well, they both did, and they both made it out to that game. And my mom went to vet school at Ohio State. My dad's dad went to medical school, I believe, or maybe his undergrad at Ohio State. Plenty of friends and family went to Ohio State. They were all, you know, giving my parents, like, back home, like, all the, you know, they should give them a good game. They'll play them tough. They'll play them hard. You know, just really kind of condescending kind of, you know, stuff like that.
Of course, because they're the Ohio State University. They're a bunch of pricks.
It's a unique fan base. You know, it's, they're just, you know, it's a, maybe a bit of an echo chamber at times.
Yeah.
But, they kept getting those, you know, and right off the bat, I mean, we just start putting it to them, and, that was just, I could, another one of those moments where you look around and you're thinking, wait.
Is this happening? Yo,
that's the moment. When.
So that was one of the only games in my whole career that I was just like praying, like looking at the clock, like, let's go. Like, I wanted the game to end as soon as possible because I didn't think that this could actually be happening.
And in so many moments too, that are just like, so rare, and like, how did that happen? Like, you know, it was just it seemed like everything just went for us and went our way. And for me, like, you know, I couldn't talk the day after. I was like just screaming so loud, and like, you know, I literally lost my voice like the next day. I couldn't talk. It was just an amazing day. Hug my parents.
Did you lose your voice in Kinnick or in Summit?
Well, it was so late. I didn't go out after the game. It was like, by the time we all got out, it was like, and if you had media, it was like, gosh, it was like midnight or something. And I was so tired. I mean, I was spent. That's funny. The one game I didn't make it out.
That's tough.
Yeah.
That's tough. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. No, we had plenty other of, you know.
Oh, we did.
We had our late nights in Summit. That's for sure.
Yeah. More than enough.
What's funny about you saying that your parents were getting razzed back home and stuff. When we beat Michigan, I had offered one of my best friends a ticket to the game. And he basically said like, nah, I don't want it. They're going to blow y'all out.
Oh,
and we beat him. And then when I offered him the ticket to the Ohio State game, he actually took the ticket, and because he had learned his lesson. So
good for him.
We got him trained, War Daddy.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, no, they wore all their Hawkeye stuff. I grew up in Southern Ohio. A few years ago, they moved up like 20 minutes east of the Columbus area. So they're in the thick of Buckeye country, and they wore all their Iowa shit for, you know, the entire week after. Got plenty of dirty looks, all that stuff.
Love it.
That's the kind of trolling that we need out of your family.
Yeah, side note here real quick. Grew up in Southern Ohio, Dayton to be exact.
Yep.
St. Patty Day coming up here real soon. You going to make a trek back home?
No, I know it's a big thing in the UD crowd. So Chris is actually going to be up in your old stomping grounds for Paddy's Day.
Chicago? Oh, Chicago Paddy's Day is a good time.
It is a good time. I've been there.
What? Dayton St. Paddy's Day. I've heard some legendary stories.
Yeah, you want to be careful if you're if you're imbibing, and you don't want to, I forget exactly. You want to make sure you're on a line. That's all I remember hearing someone say is.
Yeah, it's like one neighborhood, and it's like all college houses, but like if you see pictures, there's just no one on the street.
Yeah,
you're in somebody's lawn. Because otherwise, the cops come like SWAT mode and like take you down.
So yeah, you can't get off. I remember hearing a story, and it's probably just like an old something that they just kind of passed down, but. Yeah, it's the UD St. Paddy's Day, and you can't walk on the street. You gotta stay on the lawn. I remember hearing a story about a kid like getting on the street, and they got like the horse cops. He caught like a billy club to the face or something. It's probably like a myth or something that they passed down or something. But like, I just imagine some drunk idiot, 20-year-old stumbling in the street and horse cop galloping by, just smack him in the face.
That's a good one.
So, lifestyle or something.
That cop's just hoping somebody stumbles into the street.
Yeah. That's tremendous.
He wants to take a swing.
Yeah.
So, Ohio State happens. Finish out your story at Iowa. You end up training with us for Pro Day.
Yeah. So, trained with you guys for Pro Day. And for me, I was really, I was unsure of whether I wanted to keep playing or not.
Right.
I had played football every year of my life from third grade up until that point. And wasn't sure if it was burnout or what it was. But for me, I wasn't sure if I really wanted to go down the professional route.
You were definitely talented enough, though.
Oh, I appreciate you saying that. I definitely had the opportunity, and for me, I just ended up deciding it wasn't the route I wanted to take. Mm-hmm. It was a good opportunity, and I appreciate all the time attention that folks put into me. Being able to get there for me, it just wasn't the route I wanted to go.
And so
to clarify for the fans, you did get signed by the Redskins after the draft.
I did. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you spent what, like a week there and just like,
yeah.
And you were like enough time that you were like, yeah, I'm just, this isn't it
for me. I just didn't want to half ass it.
Right.
Football is going to be one of those things. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it right, and I'm going to give it my all, and I'm not going to do it the disservice of just half-assing it. And for me, it just seemed like the right time.
Mm-hmm. So but then
we do appreciate you training, because the day after Pro Day or the night of Pro Day, we had a good time with you boys.
That was just oof. That was one. That was one for the ages.
Do you have any 2 cents on that night, Sean? We've told that story a couple times.
So I remember hearing what you guys did over at
Benton Street.
Benton, yeah, you guys
it woke me up out of bed.
Yeah,
it got a little extracurricular. some could say.
I remember going like, oh god, it was Blackstone, and then we went out to what was that little town? Was that
we went to like
West North Branch.
Yeah.
We went to West Branch.
Yeah, we went to like North Liberty. We went to
and then we went to North Liberty, then came back down to Iowa City. Yeah, well, the thing was, it's like a Tuesday
Monday. Monday night.
It was a Monday night.
And we were alone in every bar.
What are these people doing?
Just acting a fool on a Monday night.
I know at one point, Sean, you were in top form when we went to Joe's place. I think we were over, or no, it was Spoko. One of the two. I don't remember. It was a good time, man.
You saw guys that you never saw partake. It was definitely, you know, it was a good last hurrah for everyone.
It really was.
That was it right there. Yeah.
And so the NFL wasn't the path. What is the path for Sean Daddy Welsh, and where are you now?
Yeah, you know, I mean, professionally, I work for Eli Lilly, so pharmaceuticals, and I work in sales. And for me, I don't know if I maybe started with this, but I moved out to Arizona, so I'm down here with Drake.
Yeah,
enjoying the sun and the you know, the pool and the golf and all that.
You're living it.
But no, you know what? I mean, you know, for me, you know that. You know, I think still looking for what that is. I think a lot of guys are looking for that thing that can get you back to that, I guess, that level or that that energy,
that drive
that football does. Yeah, I mean, it's for a lot of people, it's coaching. You know, I've done a little bit of volunteering here and there with Pee Wee and. Yeah, you know, I mean, there's still looking for that kind of thing to not replace, but like, you know, what football did for me, what football did for you guys. Everybody has that thing.
Absolutely. Well, Sean, it was great to catch up. I was literally sitting back in the middle of this just thinking, damn, it's so nice to just talk and like.
Yeah, man.
Just catch up and relive the good old days, which is really why we have this podcast, because we can't let it go. we are really thankful we finally able to get you on, hit some pretty nice topics that I hope the fans enjoy listening to and getting a little bit better insight of the Daddy Welsh, and we wish you all the best moving forward.
Yeah, man, I really appreciate you guys having my my sorry washed up ass on.
Hey, man, that's exactly what this is all about. Sorry washed up guys talking about all the good times.
Yeah, privilege and an honor. No, my mom's gonna flip a shit. I mean, that, you know, she's gonna be able to see this, and it's I think it's a good thing you guys are doing. It's good for me too. I mean, I was kind of thinking the same thing, Clue. It's nice to catch up. So. Appreciate
good.
You.
Good deal. Well, that's episode 96, Drake, was it?
96.
Dude, we're four away. And yep. And after that, we're shutting it down. That's it.
What are you doing for 100?
Secret.
Okay.
It's working on it.
It's a secret as in we don't even know what we're doing.
Yeah,
yet.
Secret as in we got to figure that out.
Resurrecting the ghost of now, Kinnick.
Yeah, we're going to bring in Kinnick. Oh, we're bringing in Kinnick now.
Well, hey. The number one would be Gary Dolphin. That's my number one wish for 100.
We're trying.
And I'm just going to put it out there.
Yeah.
But if we can't get Gary Dolphin, we have something.
Do what you do best.
Oh, I've already been on the phone and talked with him, and we just have to find a time to do it. So,
Hoover, next one's 97. What are we doing for that?
I'm just
hopefully not talking about you, because I will shut my laptop.
I'm doing a solo episode, baby. I'm talking about how I still got records on the board.
And we're gonna have no more subscribers because you.
All right, that's it. That's what 100, not 100, 75 minutes worth of Dad Sean Welsh Wash Up Walk-Ons content. Thank you guys for listening again, Sean. Thanks for joining, and stay tuned, because we're rolling up on that 100 fast. So, heart don't have stars, and that's it. Walk on down.
Hey, I'm everyone. I'm MJ Acosta-Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast
that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo.
We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams.
Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today.
So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts and be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram too.